Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life.
Hello, friends. 2020 has been and continues to be quite a ride. I want to acknowledge how the world is right now, so I'm going to read a social media post I wrote up this morning. I want to share how physical movement can lead into all types of change and honestly why it matters. I don't normally do super straight talk on my social media. I'm all about encouraging you and supporting you and not being another voice that adds pressure or shame or feeling less than to your plate. Today, I don't want you to feel any of those things either, but I am going to be direct. I've been being direct with myself over the last few weeks, and it keeps intensifying. First off, know that I'm an internal processor. I'm not one to post new or raw emotions online, so this won't become a regular thing for me, but the statement is something I'm leaning into a lot right now. Growth and positive change require discomfort. Change does not happen on accident. Change doesn't happen because we hope it will. Change doesn't happen because of wishful thinking and well wishes. I am convinced of the power of prayer, but if that prayer doesn't cause you to then turn around and do something, to be convicted about something, then I'll ask if you're able to listen, because love looks like something. I believe in the value of leaning into hard things with intention. This is why I teach the type of movement that I do. It's not flashy or sexy. I don't promise you change or healing, but I promise you tools if you do the work. If you're willing to learn about your body, your movement patterns, and if you're willing to move your body. You can watch all my videos, my how-tos, and my tutorials, but if you don't move your body, you won't see the change. And going from not moving to moving is extremely hard. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There are so many neural pathways and habits and values that need to be evaluated, questioned, pushed through, and honestly, there are days where it's a wrestling match with ourselves to take actions that align with what we say our values are. The art and practice of being honest with yourself about how our values and actions align or don't align is a long, painful, and uncomfortable process. But it's unavoidable, friends. If you want growth, you have to embrace change. The world we live in right now needs change. It needs love and people who are willing to love by being willing to do the hard things. So I'm going to continue to teach movement, but know that there's always a deeper message behind what I teach. I'm always asking if you're willing to be uncomfortable for the sake of growth and change and love, because movement matters. Being willing to move your body, move your position, your beliefs, leaning into new neural pathways, all of it happens on purpose. Change does not happen on accident or easily, but it is worth it. I keep coming back to my intentional movement practice to bring me back into my body. With so much media and life happening and trying to keep up with it all, I keep feeling pulled into places where change doesn't happen, just darkness and hopelessness. I can move myself quite literally out of this space. I keep coming back to the stress and immune support classes I created a couple months ago. They are very grounding and they help me process from a place of being present. What I teach isn't movement where you zone out, where you plug in your headphones and watch your favorite show, where you're grateful to be disconnected from your body while it's doing something uncomfortable. What I teach is movement where you have to feel it all. You feel where you're moving and where you're not. You notice your blind spots, and then you do the hard work of feeling like you can't do something very well or you can't do something at all, but you try anyway. And that is where we all start. If your body is needing some grounding movement, you can follow the link in my show notes to get access to two free 10-minute movement classes. Intentional movement is a powerful springboard. So the topic for today flows quite well from this idea, and we're going to lean into talking about shoes. So movement matters, and our feet matter. And if you think about our feet, they're our foundation. It's our base. It's where if you were going to build a building and you pour the concrete and you build the foundation, you want it to be solid and you want it to know, you want to know that it doesn't have cracks, that it's not weak, that it's not tippy, that it's even and level. And I am not an architect by any means, but I do know that the foundation is extremely important of anything that you build. And so when we're talking about our movement practice, we sometimes forget about our feet. We focus so easily on the big, the shiny things. So we think, focus on your arms and your core and your back and your legs. And those are all extremely important. They're parts of your body and your whole body is beautiful. But to really dial it back to realize, wow, like how is my base? How is my foundation? And so I'm going to be talking about the physiological and anatomical foundation of our body, but all of these ideas, I love the type of movement that I teach because it applies to all of life. So just like the blog post or social media posts that I wrote above, when you think about movement, you can apply it to so many areas of your life. And so I want to talk about shoes, but I want to talk about our feet, but I also do want you to have that freedom to take what I say and zoom out and apply it to larger areas of your life, to think about your foundation, to think about balance, to think about a more holistic mindset rather than just brushing over something that might seem small, but realize that, wow, this is really foundational and it's important. So today I want to chat through some of the basics of foot anatomy, and I want to answer a few questions that I get from birth workers about shoes and foot pain and being on the job, all of that. There are some personalities that they just love their shoes and they're always on the hunt for a new cute pair, or other people just have a really stressful relationship with their shoes and feet, either because of job requirements or the feet that they currently have or the shoes that cause pain and discomfort. I wanted to zoom out for just a moment and talk a little bit about shoe history. So shoes were originally designed to protect our feet from the elements. So heat, sharp, pokey things, that type of situation where there's maybe some parts of the environment that weren't safe for the feet. And so they got some covering. So if you look at old shoes, it's a lot of leather. You can find in more recent years, maybe some, I mean, historically speaking, recent years, not like the last 10 years, but people would use old tires and cut them up and put them on their feet. So it was more of a protective element rather than what it's become now, as far as the shoe companies kind of talk about how the shoe will do part of your foot's job for you. Like they're engineered to help you with your performance and to help you with your pronation and to support you in this and this and this. And you start reading the list of what shoe companies promise your shoes will do. And you realize, wow, like part of that is what my foot could do. It definitely has the possibility or the capability of doing that. So when we talk about foot anatomy, I get real excited. So I'm going to give you I'm going to summarize more than just go too in depth and give you a couple hour lecture. But the feet are beautiful and they're amazing and they're ridiculously complex. So they have 26 bones and 33 joints just within the foot. You have all kinds of muscles and tendons. And if you think about what the foot is designed to do, it is, one, it's our base, but it's also designed to give you feedback, like neurological and biofeedback, to give you your brain information about what is happening in the ground or on the surface underneath you. Is it a little bit bumpy? Is it a little bit slick? Is it slanted to one direction? Is it soft? Is it, you know, all that information matters to your brain because your brain makes thousands and thousands of just little micro adjustments constantly that we are not cognitively aware of, but because of the feedback our brain is getting, it makes these calculated choices. So if you think of, I love the example of when you're walking towards a set of stairs, your brain makes a ton of tiny little micro adjustments to line you up, because most of us have a preferred foot that we step forward with. So most of us will almost always step onto that first stair with the same leg. And if you think about how many calculations to line it up, most of us don't do like a little scuttle step right in front of the stairs, unless we're like weren't paying attention like at all. But most of the time you are walking towards a set of stairs and you line up perfectly to take that first step. And for some of us, it's our left leg almost every time. And some of us, it's our right leg almost every time. And now that I've said that, you're going to think about that and you're going to notice. And then because I want you to almost try and make the calculations on your own, because when we go into our, when we almost kind of circumvent the brain's ability to make these decisions without our help, and we start trying to help the brain, it can almost feel really awkward and out of alignment. So this is kind of a fun practice just to, I think, appreciate how intricate and how beautiful the brain is wired, is try every time you start walking towards the steps, thinking about it. And all of a sudden it'll just feel really weird. And you'll be like, wait, what step do I, what leg normally goes first? And wait, how do I line it up so that it just flows naturally from walking to stepping up on these stairs rather than doing a couple scuttle steps or anything where we feel like we have to make these intentional adjustments rather than the brain making all these incredible micro adjustments. So that's fun. So the brain does that with the input from the foot as well, where it makes tons of little micro adjustments for us in decisions of how we walk, how we carry ourselves, and how we're going to balance, how we're going to make little decisions. The foot is incredible about giving feedback to the brain so the brain can make these decisions. And it happens without a lot of cognitive, intentional support from us. Like, we don't have to constantly make these intentional decisions, which is beautiful and amazing, because it would be exhausting if we had to make all these decisions intentionally. So when it comes to the foot anatomy, when I'm talking about the foot, it's not a separate part of the body, because the foot is directly connected to the ankle. And so ankle strength and foot mobility are completely interconnected. Then that comes up to your calf. And if your calf has a lot of tension or weakness, that's going to affect your foot's ability to do its job all the way up. But then we're sitting a lot. So then we have really short and weak calves and hamstrings. Well, that's going to affect what's going on with the feet. It's going to affect what's going on above the feet. And so I'm going to be sticking with talking about the foot today, but I just want to acknowledge, like, the foot is one tiny piece of your entire body. It's a very important piece, but we can't isolate it entirely and only work on the foot and not work on any other parts of the body, because they're all interconnected and they all apply some really healthy tension to each other, and then they can give each other feedback. So it's important. So the feet are, I think we have this idea now that the feet are, our feet can talked about as pretty weak. So we need arch support. We need cushioning. We need insoles. We need orthotics. We need all kinds of special shoes to prevent pain. So when we think of specialized equipment for the feet, for lack of a better word, then a lot of times it's associated with pain. So, and even all the way to fashion. So if you want to look professional, a lot of women are told that they need to wear high heels, that flats are not professional. And yet, you know, the general consensus of when a woman takes her heels off is pain, that those heels are extremely uncomfortable. They are forcing your foot into shapes that they would never naturally be in, including all the way down to the toes and how squished together they are going to be. And yet we kind of shrug it off like, well, it's not that big of a deal because it's a small body part and I can still walk. I can still do my, you know, basic movement that I need to do in these shoes. And so it's okay. And I'm not saying, I'm not here to take away your high heels, but I am here to talk about maybe a question I like to raise questions. I think questions can be incredibly powerful because not everyone's going to come up with the exact same answers. Not everyone's going to have the exact same values. But if we slow down enough and we are willing to ask ourselves the honest questions, then we can get to some really powerful, honest answers. And then it's rather than feeling confused or unaware. So when it comes to minimalist shoes, some of you may have heard of the idea of like minimalist shoes or barefoot shoes. A lot of us have seen the five finger shoes where you can see the people's toes, the shapes of their toes, because it's almost like toe socks only in the form of shoes. And I'm going to be honest, I used to make fun of these shoes. I used to be like, oh my gosh, people are so weird. Who wear these shoes? And I'm one of those people now, so I embrace the fact that I'm a weirdo. And because they are, they're weird because they're culturally very, very different. And it's actually kind of fun. I enjoy it because it's part of my job is what I do is teach about whole body movement, including the feet. And I help people with who are struggling with foot pain. And anytime you wear something a little bit different, you get lots of comments. People will talk to you about it. And the most common question I get when I'm wearing my Vibram five-finger shoes are those comfortable? Because can't you just feel every rock, every stick, like everything on the ground? Like, isn't that so uncomfortable? No one could believe that they would be comfortable to wear. And yet, once you've transitioned into that state, your feet can handle it. So I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm going to start with the question of really starting a conversation of being countercultural. So when I wear something different, it attracts attention. So it's very similar to the idea too of if you are a doula or a midwife or a lactation consultant and you wear a shirt that says that, whether it's a cute phrase or it's just like your business logo or something like that, you're putting that out there to actually invite conversation. You're inviting through what you're wearing a conversation into what you do and why you do it and why you're passionate about it and who you serve. And so that's part, very small part. Mostly I wear my shoes because they're just ridiculously comfortable. And they make my body, I just feel really good in my body when I wear them. They don't have any back pain or any of that that surfaces. But it's kind of fun to also have your countercultural choices that you're making on purpose invite conversations that are just really fun to have. So I love talking about my weird shoes. So when we're talking about minimalist shoes, let me kind of define what that is. Because you can think of, well, flip-flop, that's pretty minimal. Like there's barely anything on your foot. Or you can think of, what if you need more support, anything like that. So let's talk about it. So what is a minimalist shoe? A minimalist shoe is a shoe that allows your foot to behave as much like a foot as possible, basically to have the least amount of change into how your foot would behave normally. So you want to have one thing to look at is a lot of times the raised heel is what can cause a lot of back pain and crankiness in people. So if you look at a regular, even tennis shoe, so we think of heels, a lot of times people think of like high heels. But if you think of a tennis shoe, a lot of times if you see the back of the tennis shoe where your heel goes, and then you see where your forefoot rests, the back has a lot more cushion. So it's elevated. So if you were to take your shoes off and to mimic what you were standing on, it'd be like a really like a triangle, like a wedge, where the back is elevated and the front is lower. And that is not evil in and of itself. You have to ask yourself, what shape does my body adapt to most of the day? So we know if we sit most of the day, our body's adapting to that. And we might experience some feedback. So for me, if I sit most of the day where it's not wiggling and where it's not floor sitting, where I'm changing my position a lot, but I'm in a meeting or I'm in a situation where I'm just in that chair where it's a lot of 90 degree angles and not a lot of movement, then my lower back is my neck and shoulders are the two areas where I'm going to first start getting that feedback. The same thing is similar for the foot. So the foot, when we immobilize it, another part of a barefoot or minimalist shoe is what you're looking for is the flexibility. So rather than the shoe not being able to bend at all on the base, can your foundation, the base where your foot is, can it move at all? Or is it pretty solid? So when we take away that movement, then the muscles and the foot can get cranky. That's just the way it is, because muscles are designed to move. And there's a lot of musculature and joints that are in the foot. So because their range of motion is so small, it's easy to think that it doesn't really matter if you take that range of motion away. But really, you know, I would say culturally, we can see that that is not true, because we have bunions, we have all kinds of foot pain that can surface. Plantar fasciitis, which I want to talk a little bit about each one of those. But it's very, very common for me to hear about my clients talking about their foot pain. So the why behind minimalist shoes would be, so I'm going to go through the list real quick before I jump forward. Minimalist shoes, you want to have your heel and your forefoot are on the same plane rather than the heel being raised. You want to be able to have room for your toes. So rather than your toes being really squished, you want to have room for your toes to be in their natural state where they're able to adapt and to move and to do their job for your body. And because when you're just imagine like squishing your, like you're in a, someone's giving you a big hug and it kind of squishes your shoulders together. Now imagine someone like gives you that hug all day long and like doesn't let go. So it's like really, maybe it's fine at first, but the longer you're in that hug and feel like your shoulders are almost squeezing towards each other, you can do it with me right now, you're going to start feeling tension in your neck and your shoulders and your back. Like it's, your arms are just going to want to move and wiggle and release. And so we're doing that a lot of the times to our feet, is we're just basically lots of compression for all day. And so we want to look at our toes being able to move. And then the other thing that I like to talk about is the heel being attached. And this is where a lot of people kind of roll their eyes at me because they love their flip-flops and they don't want me to take them away from them. But I love the example of a flip-flop, because when you walk, what do you have to do to keep that flip-flop on your foot? You have to kind of grip with your toes. The whole front of the top of your foot and the front of your leg has to adapt with every single step that you take to keep that shoe on your foot. So you're altering your gait and you're adding extra tension to a job that you're doing all day, every day. And so, you know, again, I wear flip-flops to the pool. Like I don't throw them away. So especially like showering in public showers, that type of thing where it's really convenient to be able to slip something on and to, you know, not have to think about, you know, just sanitation and that kind of thing. But I really don't wear flip-flops in my everyday life outside of like really intentional bouts, because I can feel it now where my leg has to adapt and my foot has to adapt, and it's just adding extra tension. So a lot of what I teach is also identifying where you carry extra tension. And we get that, like when we're talking about, some of us will find when we're kind of stressed out, our shoulders will creep up towards our ears, and not in a really super dramatic way, even just like quarter of an inch or half an inch. And when you do that for an hour or two, and then you catch yourself, it's like, oh, I'm starting to feel that. That's really uncomfortable. So the idea of tension in and of itself is not bad, but tension that isn't serving you is not necessary, is just extra, then that can be not serving. It just doesn't serve your body very well. It's something to notice and to really be honest about the feedback that you're experiencing from it. And so we've got a level heel, flat heel, as far as no raised heel and not just, you know, at all. It's not just high heels. We've got the heel is attached. So that's where flip-flops don't fit the what I'm talking about here, as far as not altering your gait. You have toes that are able to move, and you have that flexibility. The base can move and allow you to move. So those are things to think about when you're just processing and wondering about how your shoes are affecting your feet and your gait and all of that. So why would someone want to wear weird shoes? Because, like I said, I wear weird shoes because I don't want to alter my gait. I have discovered that when I let my body move the way it was designed to move, then I feel really good. So me sitting on the floor and wiggling around helps my body feel really good rather than sitting in a chair all the time. And me being barefoot or using more minimalist shoes not only helps my feet feel better, but after I walk, I don't have tension and pain in my lower back or in my neck and shoulders, and I'm able to now feel really, really strong. So let's talk about when you should wear minimalist shoes. I'm not saying let's have this conversation and then go through all your shoes away and then only walk around barefoot, because you will hurt yourself. So listen to me carefully when I say this. If you go from really supportive shoes, where the shoes are helping your foot do the work that you're asking it to do, your feet are foundational and they're carrying the weight of your entire body. If you're standing or as long as you're not sitting. And that's a lot, not because you're abnormally large or anything like that, but just because the feet carrying the entire weight of the body. Just think about, like, if you ask your hands to carry the entire weight of your body, if you're going to hang, which some of us can, some of us can't, that's an incredible load that we're asking of our hands. And so, but we just don't even think about asking our feet to carry that same amount of load. And they are structurally different and they're more designed to carry more of that weight on a more regular basis, but it's still quite a bit. So if we go from not having a foot that moves very much, not having the joints and the musculature used to being able to move in all the directions. So maybe they're really used to being squished. They're used to not having much range of motion. And then we give them this incredible range of motion with an incredible load. It's going to be really dramatic shift where a lot of people going there too far, too fast can experience quite a bit of pain, more pain and injury in their feet. So that's where a training program comes in. And again, our culture doesn't like talking about it for the small muscles. Like if I were going to say, if you were to come to me and say, I want to run a 5K and I don't run at all right now, or I only run a tiny bit, I can do a mile, but I want to be able to do a marathon. What do I do? And if I were to say, okay, go run a marathon tomorrow and then come back and tell me how it goes, or go run... your 5K and then come back and tell me how it goes. Most of us know that that would be too much load, too fast, and that we wouldn't be surprised if we were incredibly sore or even if we pulled something, like we'd realize like, okay, that's not a good training strategy at all to just go from nothing to the whole shebang, go for all of it. So this exact same thing applies to our feet. If we want to be able to ask our feet to carry an incredible amount of load with range of motion and without that additional support, I do recommend a training protocol where we practice. And I'll walk you through at the end of this episode just a few tips of how to start moving your feet, how to get them a little bit more mobile, and to start carrying a little bit more load without even having to change any of the shoes that you have right now at all, which is really fun because I love celebrating small changes and how small shifts can make a really huge difference rather than having to do all or nothing. And yet we are so gravitated and we're so pulled to this all or nothing mentality, myself included. So I just want to caution all of us against that. So when it comes to foot pain, if we're experiencing pain in our feet, and so for some of us, it can come in the form of bunions, or it can come in the form of plantar fasciitis, or it can come in the form of just being on our feet all day on a very solid surface. So if you're in a hospital setting, the floor is very flat and it's very hard. And so it is very common to, if you have a longer shift, to have your feet just kind of feel cranky at the end of that. So I want to get into all of that. So I want to talk specifically about plantar fasciitis at first, just overview, real brief. This isn't an in-depth conversation at all. But plantar fasciitis is basically, you can have like pain in your heel or the bottom of your foot, depends on just where you experience it, but it can feel really intense and it can be pretty debilitating. And what a lot of people do is they try and stretch and stretch and stretch and stretch, and they hope that it works. And I'm not anti-stretching, but I'm also, what's happening is it's an inflammation. It's an aggravation and inflammation. And so if you were to think of an, again, we take body parts and we act like they're a little bit different than other body parts. And so if you were to have strained or pulled your shoulder, I think most of us know that we shouldn't go doing crazy stretching regimens on a pull or a tear or something that is basically inflamed. If that area has a responded, basically it's kind of cueing you that there's a bit of an injury there. And we add a ton of stretching, it might not serve us. It might. Some of us might have had some really positive results. But if your stretching isn't serving your plantar fasciitis, what I would recommend is to add a little bit of mobility and strength without excessive stretching. So first off, when you have, and here I am talking about the benefits of barefoot, but if you have plantar fasciitis, I do not recommend walking around your house barefoot, because that area of the body has a lot of inflammation and kind of needs a break. So I do recommend not walking around in flip-flops, but getting like a nice pair of slippers to walk around the house in. So your heel doesn't have to be raised and it doesn't have to be crimping your toes together. But I have like these moccasin style slippers that I really like. And I think those can be really beneficial to supporting the healing process. So it's not a forever thing, but it's while you're in recovery, it can be really supportive to those muscles to add a little bit of cushion. And then I'm going to talk you through at the end a few exercises for the feet, some loading that you can do for those muscles to start strengthening. So when it comes to bunions, I recommend and I send all my clients to Correct Toes. So he's actually a local to the Portland area as a podiatrist who used to specialize in bunion surgery. And as he did some research, and because he really wanted to support his clients the best way he possibly could, he saw the benefits of people being able to treat their bunions by basically counteracting all the squish toe action that a lot of our shoes do. So even think of tennis shoes, like they come to that point at the front of the foot, at the front of the shoe. And that causes, I think the best example I can do is like wrap a rubber band around the tips of your toes, all of them together in one bunch, and kind of pull it, imagine this. I'm not asking you to really do it. And then you pull that your rubber band real tight into a real tight circle. That's what a lot of our shoes do to our feet all day, every day, whether we're in high heels or we're in men's dress wear or we are in just a regular tennis shoe. A lot of them, just tons of compression over, however many hours a day that we're wearing our shoes. And so bunions, a lot of times, surface from that type of tension. And so a lot of my friends or clients who have had bunions, they'll tell me stories about how their parents bought them intentionally, or maybe even not intentionally, but they remember having really narrow shoes as kids and all the way through adulthood. And so this gentleman came up with, this doctor came up with what he calls is correct toes, where it's basically spacers in between your toes and letting the stretch, the gentle pull of the toes being able to go into their more natural position, and you gradually increase this because another tool that I like is they're called Happy Feet, and they're socks. They're almost, they look similar to what you would wear if you were going to go to a like pedicure and they want your toes to be able to be separated. So they have the little like foam toe separators that they stick in between your toes. Now, for many of us, that is a really large range of motion for our feet. Like it can almost feel uncomfortable. So this is, again, something that you gradually introduce into your day. You don't put those socks on or put the toe separators on and then walk all day in them because it's very similar to a marathon. But you start with like 5 minutes like for a week, and then you gradually go to 10 minutes for the next week. And so you slowly start increasing your tolerance, your body's tolerance for not for pain, but for adaptation. Because adaptation happens when we don't blow past our boundaries, but where we kind of find that boundary and we honor it, and we gently step just a teeny bit outside of it rather than blow past it. And that's where footwork can, you know, just require a little bit of patience. But you can, I know of a lot of people who have, through movement and through some lifestyle changes, including figuring out what footwear to wear and some exercises, some movement, some supportive tools, they have moved out of excruciating foot pain. And even if you do wind up needing to have some kind of surgery, whether for bunions or something else, I always advocate for get your body strong before you go into that surgery. So try the tools, try the practice. Same thing with my core and pelvic floor work. Like I'm not anti-surgery for anyone, but I think for you and for your psyche, the best thing you can do is to go into that surgery strong and to have the tools. So it's almost called prehab, like where you, because sometimes we get this mindset of like, oh, I'm just going to do surgery and then I'll rehab it. But you actually can have a much higher, a lot of times we can heal faster if we go into that surgery stronger, if we have prehabbed before we then have to go into the rehab. So that can be, these are really helpful tools to just try and see what your body does and see how you can, how it responds to these changes. And then you can start developing a little self-care routine around your feet because it's your base and it's your foundation and it's actually really important. So when we're talking about best shoes for birth workers, this gets a little tricky because we want water, at least water resistant, because body fluids, because you never know. So you can be on your feet quite a while. So it's a little different again for home births rather than for a hospital situation, because the hospital is very, it needs to be this way. So it's not a critique on this institution itself, but having those really hard floors, so there's no carpet, which obviously makes sense for keeping things clean and keeping things sterile, but it's just hard. It's hard and it's flat. And that can take its toll on your body. So if you think of holding your arm in one position, so even if it's like in a cast, that traditional cast position where your elbow is bent at 90 degrees and your arm is like resting in front of your belly or your chest. And if you imagine not moving your arm for 8 hours, not moving your shoulder, not moving your elbow, not moving your hand, that part of your body will start talking to you. You're just going to want to, oh, so desperately reach your arm up and over or wiggle or do something, because the body is designed for movement and movement brings blood flow and oxygen. And so then those muscles are then nourished. And so if we lack movement, we lack nourishment, and our body will start to communicate with us that it's experiencing certain kind of feedback that it wants us to adjust when we get pain. So when it comes to our feet, if they are in shoes that do not move on a floor that is very flat, then that part of your body from your ankle down is very immobile and it's not getting a lot of blood flow. It's not getting a lot of nourishment. And so it is not overly shocking that that part of the body would communicate to us after an 8, 12, 18, 24 hour shift of being in those shoes. So one, best shoes for shoe worker, for birth workers, not for shoe workers, best shoes for birth workers. Finding something where your toes can wiggle. I do recommend finding a shoe where your heel isn't overly elevated. And again, you have to work within your parameters as far as if you have a dress code or if you have just all the other considerations that us as birth workers have to take into mind, that inviting that movement into your body can be really helpful in those little breaks. So I talked about in our clothing conversation last week, where you want to be able to find clothes that you can move and wiggle and breathe in so that you can support your body while you're on the job. And the same thing for your feet. So can you find ways that you can even wiggle and move your feet? So every time you go to the bathroom, like do a little calf stretch where you pop your forefoot up onto a door frame or onto a wall and kind of lean a little bit forward so that your ankle isn't just in that 90 degree range, but it gets a little bit of a stretch and it can feel really lovely up the underside of the foot. Wiggling your toes, even in your shoes, spreading your toes out, even in your shoes. So just sending that extra oxygen and that extra blood flow and a little bit of intention into your feet. Again, we're battling that mindset of when we are, as a birth worker, sometimes it feels like embodiment, me being in my body, me nurturing and caring for my body is somehow detracting from my service to my clients. And it's very similar to feeling like I can do the job more effectively by this idea that I was talking about earlier in when I read my social media post was how we can move two different ways, how we can kind of tune out from our body. So if I can put in my earphones, I can zone out on something and I can power through my workout, where I'm not going to say that that's bad every single time, but to not be able to feel my body and connect with what's going on and to acknowledge it and develop that relationship with it, it's going to impact. It's going to cause impact. And so the same thing happens with our physical body. So we're on the job, and I think sometimes we can feel like any connection to our own body is too much and it's too distracting. And so we can kind of cut that off. And rather than being connected and being embodied. So I really love the idea of really challenging the idea that that your embodiment practice happening during your work actually can provide you with the ability to support your clients more fully because you're more aware. When you're aware of yourself, you're going to be more aware of your surroundings. You're going to be more aware and more able to pick up cues from your clients. And you're going to be able to serve from a place that is more present because, and this is, again, I like to connect all different kinds of work and truths because all truth is truth. And so Brené Brown talks about how when you shut off one emotion, you shut off all of them. So if you shut off pain or you don't want to experience discomfort, you're also going to shut down the joy, the ability to experience joy and gratitude and that type of emotion. And so we do the exact same thing in our physical body. So when I try and zone out from my discomfort, I'm actually less emotionally and present to be able to experience the joy with my client. And so just kind of food for thought, something to think about where you practicing all these little embodiment practices, you caring and nourishing for your own body in ways where when you can walk away from a birth and feel like you're thriving. Like, this is what I was on the earth to do. Yes, there are hard days. Yes, there are really hard emotional situations. But also, that's really powerful too, because if I have the practice of sitting with the discomfort and asking the questions, even in my physical body, then when the emotional situation comes up and my client needs me to be present with them in the hard, in the rough, in the uncomfortable, I am so much more easily able to go there and actually be present rather than not being able to connect on that level and to be able to do it in a way with healthy boundaries so that I am not overextending or over offering myself emotionally because I have this practice of embodiment. I have this practice of being in my own skin, being aware of my own body, being aware of my needs and my nourishing myself in the middle of the practice, not just waiting till the practice is over. So this work, again, I love to connect it to everything because it all matters. And our physical body is just one part of who we are. And it's not separate. We're all connected. We're physical, we're emotional, we are psychological, we're spiritual. We're all different aspects in one body. And so when we only talk about one type of one aspect of us, we're missing the whole picture. So getting down into the nitty gritty of exercises or just tips for foot pain. So one, I really like the calf stretch because it adds that variability to the ankle and to the foot position that a lot of times it doesn't get access to. And it's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. It's in a lot of my exercise classes, but basically taking a towel or a rolled up yoga mat, or if you have a half foam roller, and you put your heel on the ground in front of it and you put your forefoot up on top and stacking your body so that your hip is stacked over your knee is stacked over your ankle of the stretching leg. And you can even be a little bit behind if that other foot needs to be back a little bit for stability's sake. And then you stretch, you enjoy the stretch and you get that variability and that movement. And you breathe and you notice if you're having any extra tension in your body from where your foot position is at. So do your neck and shoulders react to this foot and ankle and calf stretch? Do your fingers, are they gripping? Are your toes gripping? Can you release that? Your hips, how are they? Are they feeling really tense and like they want to extra support you right now? So that's a really fun one to do that's really simple and it's accessible, but it also can be really powerful and can help you notice your own movement patterns. You can hold hands with your feet, which basically you take your fingers and you thread them in between each toe and only going, bringing the fingers as far down towards the base of the toe where the toes meet as you comfortably can. So maybe not day one, shoving your fingers all the way in, maybe just a little bit, like right at the tips. And then as you hold them there, you're enjoying that stretch of the toes being separated. And you can even wrap your thumb around your foot so your palm of your hand is pressed up against the base of the foot and apply a little bit of a twisting, just gentle back and forth, basically moving your hand in all the directions, little gentle circles, and notice how much mobility as in the foot, notice any tension, kind of look for some patterns there, but celebrating the fact that those little micro movements are bringing lots of blood flow and variability to those tiny joints. So those tiny joints and muscles need tiny feedback. And so for them, it's actually really big, but with our mental blocks that sometimes we have, those little movements, we can just easily dismiss or feel like they don't make a huge difference, but they really do. Notice, do you walk with your toes pointing forward or do they like to hang out a little bit pointed in or a little bit pointed out? Maybe one likes to point out a little bit more than the other. Just catching yourself, can you start moving your toes being pointed more forward? Again, if you are pretty far out or pretty internally rotated where the toes are pointing towards each other, and you just, bam, go straight forward, you're going to be tweaking your knees pretty badly and you can cause injury. So this is something where it's going to be over time. You gradually start inviting your toes to be pointing a little bit more towards the front, but not just direct overnight, like quick change. Playing with balance can be really fun and it's really strengthening for the feet and the toes. So throwing some pillows or some blankets onto the ground and walking around. So rather than the surface being extremely hard, there's that soft give that then your foot is making all these little micro adjustments, your ankle and your feet, to keep you upright. And it's providing a lot of variability and strength. And it can be done for fun. Like you can do it with, you have your kids involved and do a little, like a path around your living room or around your house and, you know, have to jump or wiggle or do certain things at different points, but then you're getting that foot strength in. Talking about walking on things that aren't perfectly flat and level, looking for that those opportunities where it's not just flat and level. So you get so much strength from walking on the gravel or walking in the grass or walking in on situations where it's not just cement. It can provide a lot of foot strength and stability just from getting that variability. You can roll your feet out with a ball. It can be really lovely. So listen to your body as far as how much pressure, but it can be a tennis ball or a bouncy ball But applying a little bit of tension there, just the pressure can feel really lovely. It's a self-massage, so self-directed is really powerful. The other thing you can do is put a plastic water bottle in the freezer. And when you get home from the job and your feet are just achy and tired, pull it out and roll your feet out on that. And so you basically have an ice pack slash water bottle slash massage happening on your feet. And that can feel really lovely. Or you can even put the water bottle like in a sock if it's just a little too cold directly on the skin. And a lot of the other exercises I teach in my classes, as far as hamstring stretch, your pelvic lift, calf elevators, toe wiggles, all of those things can be really supportive for building strength in the feet and all the way up the legs. So if you are interested in diving a little bit deeper into understanding your feet and how to support them and maybe transitioning to minimal footwear, I really recommend Whole Body Barefoot, Transitioning to Minimal Footwear by Katie Bowman, the book, and Simple Steps to Foot Pain Relief, also by Katie Bowman. So I feel like she's one of my teachers, and she has really broken down this concept of a holistic approach in a very accessible way and not overly scientific, but you still walk away understanding. And so I really enjoy her books. And then she does have different exercise protocols in the books to help you not just understand, but also move out of pain and into a little bit more holistic approach. So in my upcoming online classes, I'm going to be including some foot exercise videos and classes. So be sure to be signed up for my newsletter to keep in the loop on everything coming up. If you have any questions that have surfaced about your feet or about movement or about any of that, go ahead and feel free to email me at any time at erinunderwoodmovement@gmail.com. So erinunderwoodmovement@gmail.com. If you're wanting to move your body in an intentional and grounding way today, supporting your feet all the way up, I have several free classes that you can get started with. All of the information can be found under today's show notes. I'm grateful for you and your love and your service to our community that's so needed right now. Thank you for being willing to think about your foundation, to think about movement, to think about supporting your own body and being embodied while you serve your clients. And thank you so much for being willing to do all of that work while you're supporting your birthing community. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll be talking to you soon.
The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.